Germans didn't really have stand-up. They had comedy. It was definitely humor-oriented, but it wasn't that there was so much fat around a joke because it was more storytelling. And stand-up is where you take it to the most minimal possible words to get that joke.
Welcome to Setup Punchline. I am Bernhard Hiergeist, and this is a podcast about stand-up comedy. Here we'll listen to live recordings of comedians and let them talk about their art and craft, our notion of comedy in general. Today's guest is Liliana Velázquez Montoya. Liliana is a Berlin-based stand-up comedian. If you are into English stand-up in Berlin, it is very probable that you saw Liliana at a show or that you even were at one of her shows. Apart from English, she also does stand-up in Spanish and, with increasing frequency, also in German. And apart from stand-up, she pursues various art forms, theater, performance, painting, and even more. I'll let her explain for herself in a bit. From Liliana, we hear an extract of a set she played at a digital show during the pandemic, namely Couscous Comedy Digital, in spring 2021. That means the audience you hear laughing is connected via Zoom call. The show format works quite well, but of course the feeling is very different to a quote-unquote normal stand-up show. What does normal even mean with regard to stand-up these days? Anyways, I find it very interesting to have this type of digital show included in the podcast. Consider it a contemporary document, something to tell your children should the pandemic ever be over. Look at this, that's how we did stand-up in those days. Now have fun with Liliana Velázquez Montoya.
Ich bin wegen der Liebe nach Berlin gekommen. Aber ich muss euch sagen, mit einem deutschen Mann zusammen zu sein, ist noch einsamer als Single zu sein. Ja, dating a German is lonelier than being single. Mein letzter Deutschmann, Freund, sagt mir, oh mein Gott, Liliana, ich wusste nicht, dass du so viel Attention brauchst. Wirklich? Du bist mit einem tätowierten Tango-Tanzerin, Latina, Domina, die Stand-up-Comedy in drei Sprachen macht, zusammen. Was hast du denn gedacht? Also jetzt, ich bin Single. Und mit 43 das erste Mal auf eine Dating-App. Wir leben in einer Pandemie. Und ich habe mit Online-Dating angefangen. I am living on the edge. Als Domina war ich es gewohnt, dass ich mit Online-Dating Geld verdiene. Jetzt zahle ich dafür, eine von 39 für eine Dating-App zu sein, die nach einem Mann mit negativen Covid-Tests sucht, der die Rechnung teilen will, bei Netto, ist ja, hat ja sonst nicht auf. Ich verliere Geld mit jedem Swipe. Jetzt bin ich pleite und immer noch Single. Also, ich masturbiere. Ja. Ich bin eine Frau, die liebe gerne masturbiert. Ja. Diese zwei Finger an meine Glitteres berühren. Oh, I feel safe. and secure. Und alles ist okay in der Welt. Diese zwei Finger sind meinem Kücheldecke. Ja, aber ich masturbiere nicht, um einen Orgasmus zu haben, sondern für Self-Care. Ja, aber jetzt, ich bin in Berlin 8 Jahre, inzwischen, ich masturbiere nicht mehr für Self-Care, ich masturbiere, um nicht zu toten.
Hey, I'm Liliana Velasquez Montoya, and I'm living in Berlin for 8 years now. I am a stand-up comedian, writer, actor, dancer. Yeah, I'm based out of Berlin. I run Sunday Slips open mic every Sunday, and I have my solo shows. I'm always ready and willing to get up on stage. I've been living in Berlin for 8 years. Since May 1st, 2013. I lived in New York City before that. I lived in Manhattan. I lived in Brooklyn for 16 years. I lived in New York for 16 years prior to coming to Berlin. I was an actress, dancer. I started my career as a stand-up. I worked as a dominatrix, and I worked as a waitress or manager of bars, restaurants, as you do when you're an artist, because work comes and then there's no work and then work. You know, like you get into a movie and you're working for a few months and then the movie's over and then you work in a restaurant for a few months while you audition for the next movie. Well, I'm from Medellin, but I was born in New Jersey. So I grew up with double nationality and I grew up basically crossing the border legally all my life because my parents wanted to raise us with Colombian understanding, morale of, you know, they're very Catholic Colombian and they dreamed of living in Colombia, but it was a very dangerous time period. So they were making money and surviving in the United States. So we grew up mostly in Miami, Florida and Medellin, Colombia. I was the manager of the restaurant Olive Tree Cafe and Comedy Cellar. I ended up working there and I would come downstairs and watch 3 comedy shows a night and just hang out. And I mean the same show every night. Like I would watch 3 shows in a row. So the show would end, maybe 1 or 2 comics would change. And I became friends with people. And it's a very big family dynamic there. So, you know, if they needed somebody to be a waitress, I would jump right in. If they needed somebody to help, you know, make sure that the management stuff was counted and done, I would jump in. So I just became part of the team. They're also very nice people. Like I said, it's a community. And I was fortunate enough to be on the inside at an early place in my life. And I was still a performer, so I was still acting and doing dom work and auditioning for movies and commercials. You know, my face was on billboards for like sex toy shops. Well, that's what my face says. It says sex toy. So I was a very active person pursuing the arts. And I was fortunate enough to end up at the Comedy Cellar as a model and as a manager slash everything. Like you walked into the hotel, the restaurant, and I'm the person that said, hi, how many people? Let me seat you, blah, blah, blah. And then I had a really terrible miscarriage and I got really, really depressed. And all of these wonderful comedians and people from the Comedy Cellar were just kind of pushing me to try something new. They encouraged me to try comedy. And I did. I went to Times Square and I did my first comedy set at TSAC, which was Times Square Art Center. And that was in 2008. I got off stage. I was number 47 on the lineup or something ridiculous, you know? And I got off stage and I immediately called Keith Robinson. And I was like, I did it. I did it. You told me I did it. And he's like, how did you do? And I was like, I was terrible. And he was like, how do you feel? I'm like, great. And he was like, uh-oh, we got a problem. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you're going to do it. And I was like, yep, I'm going to do this. And then I just kept going on. I would do like 3-4 mics a day. And then I ran my own open mic in Times Square at the Producers Club called Little Chewy Comedy with Chewy May. And then I ran a monthly show called Hail to the V, which was an all-female comedian lineup with a different male comic as a MC every month. And that was at Dixon Place Theater. And then I had another monthly show called KGB Show, which was at Crane Theater above Eastville Comedy and below KGB Bar. And that was another monthly residency, which was more the style that I do with music, comedy, poetry, very mixed media. I definitely want to go back to New York City and hit the stage there and show them how much I've grown and developed and try and be successful there again. I would like for Berlin to remain my headquarters, my home for the rest of my life. But when I first moved here, I thought I would be going back and forth between Berlin and New York more often. And I haven't really done that. So I think that my goal, especially with stand-up and New York City being such an important city for stand-up comedy, and that I had such a strong start there. Even when I left, they were like, what are you doing? You just got your SAG-AFTRA card. You have these three shows running. Why are you moving to Europe? And I was like, I've never lived in Europe. I'm out. But that's my adventurous spirit. And I'm grateful for that because I ended up going on tour and being in Asia and South Africa and doing all these things. And I got to see all of Europe. So I miss New York City and I want to challenge myself. And that's what I'm missing. I'm missing that going back to New York and seeing all those old comedians that gave me a lot of advice and having them be like, yo, you're doing good. Or, yo, that sucks. You know, like, what the fuck? You think that's a joke? What are you talking about? Like, I love that tough love that the New York, I still have a lot of contact with some of them and I call them often, but I miss that one-on-one and I would love to be in New York and, you know, have that chance again where I can be successful there. I can see a difference between American stand-up and British stand-up, but I can't really see a difference between New York City stand-up and Miami stand-up or LA stand-up. Maybe like middle America, I could see some kind of difference, but not really. I'm always American stand-up. I mean, that's what I grew up with. I can't become British stand-up. I'm not British. I don't really understand British humor. And when I watch Mighty Python, I laugh and I enjoy it, but my sketch comedy preferences are definitely American style. And by American, I mean United States. I think like in South America, they have humorists and they have storytellers with a lot of humor. And nowadays, now we're in 2021, there's definitely stand-up. Like when I think about Medellin or Bogota, Colombia, where I'm from, when I think about stand-up humor back in 1980s to 90s, it was very much a very folkloric style, more storyteller with lots of funny parts, but not the rhythm that stand-up has. Now, when I look at Comedy Central South America, when I look at these comics that are coming up and that are doing things that are amazing, they definitely have adapted to the format, which is stand-up. So stand-up does have a different rhythm than a funny monologist. It all depends on the, there's no standard rhythm. There's definitely beats and there's definitely callbacks and segues and there's techniques that are used. But every comedian, I cannot compare Judah Friedlander to Veronica Mosey or Marina Franklin or Amy Schumer or they all have different styles. Judah Friedlander is very slow delivery. Dave Attell, very slow delivery, holds back, hard punchlines, sharp edges. And some people are just like wittier or not wittier, but definitely have a different rhythm. You know, it's like, I think it also all depends on like what joke you're listening to or what's special. Because as people develop, they also kind of change. Even German comedians are picking up one or the other. You can tell who they study. You can tell also the most German people who speak English chose at a young age whether they were going to watch television from the United States or television from Britain. And that's where their history comes from in the sense of a language. And that's where their rhythm is going to come from. And that's where their concept of funny was developed when they studied the language. So you see the difference between just the way German people who speak with a British accent and German people who speak with an American accent. And they didn't even study abroad. They just television. Germans didn't really have stand-up. They had comedy. They had comedy the same way that I mean in South America. They had comedy. It was definitely humor oriented, but it wasn't there was so much fat around a joke because it was more storytelling. And stand up is where you take it to the most minimal possible words to get that joke, you know? So you're not embellishing so much. You're not using all this magical realism. You know, you're just really trying to hit that like boom, boom, boom. I always actually wanted to start doing it in German. I opened with Hassoun, one of the first German-English open mics in Berlin about 5 years ago, maybe even six. And I was really excited back then to learn German. Unfortunately, I lost my rhythm. I was booked to go on tour in English and just kind of lost my way with learning the German. Then I broke up, you know, I broke up with the German. I stopped running that small, it was at Building Matilda, and God, I can't remember the name of it. I think it was called Matilda's. Anyhow, we booked somebody on the show that I didn't like, and I was like, I'm done producing this show. And then I went on tour. From the tour, I ended up going through Asia and South Africa, and it was all in English, so I kind of lost my rhythm of wanting to speak in German and perform in German. Before the pandemic, the German man who invited me to live in Berlin had an accident and he died tragically. And that person really did all of, you know, he really helped me with all of my German paperwork and all of my German bureaucracy. And so it was a moment where I also had to step up because I didn't know who to trust with, you know, certain important paperwork stuff. So I needed to learn more German. So between that and the pandemic happening, I was like, now's my turn. I'm really going to hit the German language. And the main goal for me is to work in German television, the way that I used to do in New York City, you know, small speaking parts on TV shows to having just the work that I like. I love working in film and television. I love working in front of the camera, from being the main actress to being a supporting actress to being a small walk-on part. Those are things that I admire, that I find that are how, no matter where I end up in the world, my career path is always kind of like, well, this is where I should be. It is concept-wise a one-to-one translation, but language-wise and humor-wise, I had to change things because the rhythm hits differently, and also it's different because when I say the joke in English, I'm a confident woman that speaks English, right? When I say the joke in German, I'm using the fact that I am an immigrant. I'm using the fact that I'm learning the language. I'm using the insecurities of this reality. So when I say it in German, I'm closer to that awkwardness of having not perfect language skills. Well, when I'm speaking in English, I'm not your token Latina. When I'm speaking in German as a Colombian American woman, you can hear it in my accent. You can hear it in the way I pronounce words. So immediately that changes things. I have to be able to make fun of myself in the fact that I know that I'm saying this as close as possible to correctly. But the German ear is like, oh, she said that, like, you know, Geschichte und Geschichte. When I'm in the middle of a joke and I'm with the adrenaline, I can very easily pronounce something so slightly wrong, but it's wrong and it's a whole different word in German. But you should know your timing already. I mean, you should know your timing. You should know 2 minutes from 5 minutes, from seven, from 15, from 20, from an hour. I mean, that's in your muscle memory if you've practiced all the time. The thing that might throw other people off is being in a studio and just having to not stop yourself because the delay. Like, you still need to maintain your rhythm. But that comes from practice as an actor, auditioning for TV parts and going into a small room with a camera and having to look at the camera as if it was an audience. Yeah. So you just got to trust your gut and trust your instinct and trust your toolkit and keep going and have fun. Because in the end, they're not there with you. So if you stop in the middle of your joke because you think that they're laughing at home, but then you just have this like really long awkward pause. Like, I guess you just have to trust your gut. For me, the thing that's helped me the most is always getting up, just getting up again. If I do something bad, I go up the next day and I learn from it. It's just getting up again. Yeah, always getting up, even if I'm in a bad mood or if I'm healthy or sick, or just like really pushing through these moments where you doubt yourself and just getting on stage. Sometimes you do these wonderful things and you think the next day you're going to do the same joke and it's going to be as wonderful, and you realize that was a moment. You were in a moment and it was brilliant and you can never repeat that moment. So you got to always be in the moment. That's my biggest lesson, is to be in the moment. You know, try not to compare yesterday with today or today with tomorrow. It's hard. Yeah. The times that I've tried to do that, I fail that, you know, like, it's like, oh, I'm going to do it as good as yesterday. And then it's a whole different audience. It's a whole, you're in a different place. And the pressure to create, it's how they say there's an old saying about you can take a bath in the same river, but it's never the same water. So I can go on stage and do the same jokes as yesterday, but there's always something of truth that has to do with today. Or even if you do three shows a night and you do the same set in three different venues, and between the first show, the second show, and the third show, something could have happened that shifts your energy, where one of those three is brilliant and one is mediocre and the other one, whatever. And there's nothing that you really changed, but you had to run from one place to the other. You were running late. You missed your train. All of these little elements, and you walk in and you're like, ah. And maybe that stress of running late made you sharper. Or maybe that extra 5 minutes that you had to like chill out and have a glass of water and write down your set made you better. It's out of your control. It's just, you know, keep going, keep practicing, keep being as true to the craft as possible. Stand-up is only one of the many ways I get attention. I'm a tango dancer. I'm a dominatrix. I'm constantly in ensemble theater pieces. I work with two different art collectives. I'm comfortable naked. As a joke, I'm saying that's because it's a cultural thing. When I say I need a lot of attention, I don't. I also give a lot of attention. So if you're dating me, I'm making sure that you are taken care of and happy, and I'm giving you attention as well. So it's a very reciprocal thing. As a joke, I say that because culturally, like you were mentioning earlier, you know, people say Germans are cold. I don't say they're cold. I say they don't give me enough attention. Like, it's my perspective. But this man did actually say that to me. Those were his words. Also, this man, I was his muse for 8 years. I was his art, like, I was his muse. He flew me around the world to take photographs of me professionally as a photographer and model. So he knew how much attention I needed. Like, there's no surprise there. Do you ask a painter what they feel after they've painted a painting, whether you like it or not? They're still going to paint another painting, even if the audience or the people at the gallery don't love it. They're still going to go home and paint another painting. The attention that I'm receiving is from myself, and it's the attention I give myself and the commitment I have to myself. It's really not about anyone else. I mean, I love entertaining audiences, and it's so reciprocal when there's a flow. But the reason I keep doing comedy and the reason I keep doing art is all about me, for me. I mean, I think that in the end, we're in the arts, and it's an umbrella that, like, the art world is an umbrella. And under that umbrella is comedian, writer, director, producer, dancer, clown, drag king. All of these things are performers that make you laugh or not. You know, writing behind the scenes, commercial work. So if this doesn't work out for me, I'm still under that umbrella. And I'm going to keep developing works of art and pieces, whether it's in my comedy sets or in my art, like collages. I have an art show coming up in January. Or if it's writing for somebody else that's like, hey, you're a new comic, but you know, you've got this, and I have a joke for you, and selling them that joke. if you look at the world as more than black and white, you know, if you look at everything, like, you know, when people say to me, oh my God, I didn't realize you were a comedian. I thought you were only an MC. And in my brain, I want to slap that person. But I smile and I say, thank you. And I'm like, how do you not see me doing jokes in between the comics? How did your brain decide that I'm not a comedian because I'm the MC of the show? But this is a very common commentary from audience members. I do art, and I don't think I can ever stop doing art. It's something that it's just innately part of my spirit. But they're all different. So they're all different emotions. When I dance, it's very different than when I have an art exhibit. It's very different. Comedy is more my career path. Like, comedy is something that once I found this art form, I realized how much I enjoyed being alone on stage, how much I enjoyed being able to look at my mistakes in life and make humor out of them. And the more I learned about the art form of stand-up comedy, the more I enjoyed the structure, the absurdity, the angles, the joke writing. They're all very different. I think I can go up on stage every single day, but do I want to sit in front of a notebook and sketch a nude model every day? Maybe in the future, maybe in a few years, maybe that's what I want. But right now, I'm still fully focused on stand-up. And it's the one that brings me the most joy. It's the one that brings me the most effort, like the most, you know, like I get up and I'm like, where's my stand-up career going? What's the plan?
That was Liliana Velázquez Montoya. I'm very happy that she was my guest today. In the show notes, you can also find several links to Liliana, about her show, or other art projects. Setup Punchline is a magazine about stand-up and comedy. You can like, share, tweet, post, or even contribute financially. You can find information on how that works in the show notes. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. Have nice holidays over Christmas and hear you next time. I am Bernhard Hiergeist, and this is Setup Punchline, a podcast about stand-up comedy.